Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Have you ever gotten robocalls or mail saying that you're pre-approved for loans or credit cards? Oh, if you have, let me just tell you that thieves, both foreign and domestic, may have you in their sights. And it's the equity in your home, believe it or not, that they want. Well, it's called home title fraud. It's one of the fastest growing crimes in the United States. And it's where thieves are after your money and they get it by forging your home's title. So it ends up looking like you sold your home, even though you didn't. Then they'll take out loans against your home and stick you with all the payments. It's a nightmare. No insurance, bank, or identity theft program protects you, though. But Home Title Lock does. For pennies a day, Home Title Lock puts a barrier around your home's online title and mortgage, and it helps keep thieves away. Again, if you've received robocalls or mail for pre-approved credit cards or loans, you need to move fast. You can receive 60 risk-free days of Home Title Lock protection now by going to HomeTitleLock.com. Register your address to verify that you're not already a victim. Go to HomeTitleLock.com. That's HomeTitleLock.com.
Your life, your country. You're listening to the Laura Ingraham Podcast.
While this report does not conclude that the president committed a crime, it also does not exonerate him. Now, I read that correctly?
Yes.
All right. Now, your report, and today you said at all times the special counsel team operated under, was guided by, and followed Justice Department policies and principles. So which DOJ policy or principle sets forth a legal standard that an investigated person is not exonerated if their innocence from criminal conduct is not conclusively determined?
Can you repeat the last part of that question?
Yeah. Which DOJ policy or principle set forth a legal standard that an investigated person is not exonerated if their innocence from criminal conduct is not conclusively determined? Where does that language come from, Director? Where is the DOJ policy that says that? Can you, let me make it easier.
Go ahead.
Can you give me an example other than Donald Trump where the Justice Department determined that an investigated person was not exonerated because their innocence was not conclusively determined?
I cannot, but this is a unique situation.
Okay, well, you can't. Time is short. I've got 5 minutes. Let's just leave it at you can't find it because I'll tell you why. It doesn't exist.
That was one of the more interesting exchanges with Congressman Radcliffe. Bob Mueller's testimony this morning. You're listening to the Laura Ingraham Podcast. We've been watching every minute, and we thought we'd bring in the best analysis, Greg Jarrett of the Fox News Channel, political analyst, and, of course, his upcoming book, Witch Hunt, The Story of the Greatest Mass Delusion in American Political History. You can pre-order it today, and you bet we are. I can't wait to have him on the Ingraham angle as well to talk about that when it comes out. But this just completely confirms what Jarrett has been talking about on Fox for now 2 years, and what we've all made clear to you, that this was an investigation in search of a crime. And today, Bob Mueller looked every minute of his, senior years. It was not a good performance for him at all. And Greg Jarrett joins us now. Greg, I'm excited for your book. I'm so glad you're on today. Your quick take on what you saw.
Well, it was not a good performance by Robert Mueller. And I think even his supporters would say he came across poorly, at times feeble of mind, lost, confused, slow. His answers were halting. He struggled to even understand some of the questions. When Chris Wallace of Fox News says this is a disaster for Dems and a disaster for Robert Mueller's reputation, then you know things are bad for the special counsel. And this demonstrates what is in my new book, various stories about how Robert Mueller was out to lunch. This is a guy who was clueless about obstruction of justice in meetings with the president's lawyers. The lawyers recounted to me how Mueller didn't understand the fundamentals of law. And so it's really a tragedy, I think, for the American public to be put through 2.5-3 years of nothing more than a hoax that begat the witch hunt.
I have to say, this was among many of the spectacles in the last 2 years, Greg. This was one of the most embarrassing moments, I think, for the entire Congress. I mean, the Republicans did fine. Although I have to say, Greg, and you probably agree, but the Republicans are not very good at this. I mean, they're not very good at the cross-examination, which is why I always think you should bring in actual lawyers who do this for a living every day, because people either tend to grandstand or they try to have their, you know, it moment. And so none of it really ends up meaning much. And I was talking to friends of mine who are up in New England today, and he said, look, this is the breakfast. This is the breakfast place I'm in Martha's Vineyard. There's no one watching. The TV's on and everyone's just having their coffee. No one cares. Like, nobody's watching this. The picture, Greg, was hilarious. I think I'm going to tweet it. It's so funny.
Oh, that's classic. Not only did almost no Americans read the Mueller report, although I read it three times, and it was
of
like
course you did.
A colonoscopy without the propofol. I mean, the thing was just disorganized and contradictory and schizophrenic. You get whiplash. I mean, I have no idea which among the morons on his special counsel team actually penned this thing, but
the worst writing ever.
It was not Robert Mueller, and that was his problem today. I mean, he has no clue what's in his report because he didn't write it.
He kept saying, when he kept being asked about things, he's like, well, if it's in the report, then yeah, that's true. There were several times where that deputy behind him nodded like, yes, yes, because he's probably pretty familiar with it. But it became increasingly clear to me that Mueller was just kind of a figurehead in that office. Is that fair to say that?
Oh, I think that's absolutely correct. And as one of the lawyers for the Trump team told me, look, this was classic Mueller. He's a guy who is a figurehead. He lets everybody else do the work for him, and then he takes credit for it. His problem is that when you have to answer questions about somebody else's work that you didn't contribute to, you're going to fumble, stumble, and mumble the way Mueller did, and it's really an embarrassment, and it really seriously blemishes his good name and reputation.
No, it was terrible. Here's another exchange with Radcliffe. Let's listen.
Now, Director, the special counsel applied this inverted burden of proof that I can't find and you said doesn't exist anywhere in the department policies, and you used it to write a report. And the very first line of your report, says, and you, as you read this morning, it authorizes the special counsel to provide the attorney general with a confidential report explaining the prosecution or declination decisions reached by the special counsel. That's the very first word of your report, right?
That's correct.
Here's the problem, Director. The special counsel didn't do that. On volume one, you did. On volume two, with respect to potential obstruction of justice, the special counsel made neither a prosecution decision or a declination decision. You made no decision. You told us this morning and in your report that you made no determination. So respectfully, Director, you didn't follow the special counsel regulations.
Didn't follow the regulations. It wasn't done right. And it was it read more like a political document. That was his point.
Yeah. You know, it is sophistry to argue that I cannot make a decision on obstruction, but I can make a decision on collusion. That's completely inconsistent. And the other point that Radcliffe made, which was a good one, is it's never the job of a prosecutor to determine whether they can exonerate somebody. Prosecutors don't exonerate. There is no prosecutor in the United States that is required or has ever done that before. And Mueller's response to that was, well, this is unique because it's the president. No, the principles of justice and the rule of law apply to everybody, including the president. And I can't recall who said it, but, you know, yes, the president's not above the law, but he's not below it either. He needs to be treated fairly and objectively and neutrally. And this report and Mueller's team of partisans were the antithesis of that.
Were you surprised at how frail he appeared from the outset today? Mueller?
Yeah, it really was, although we got a hint of it when he delivered his nine-minute news conference without taking any questions. He struggled through it, and it was clearly written by somebody else. And I believe he was asked repeatedly about various, who wrote that, who wrote your letter, and, oh, I can't get into that. Clearly, he didn't write any of this stuff. He didn't write the report. He didn't write his letter to Barr in which he complained. He didn't write his nine-minute statement, which he completely fumbled, and then they had to issue a joint statement later clarifying what he meant. I guarantee you what Democrats are going to hang their hat on today is Congressman Louie's questions back and forth with him, in which he basically said, or he implied, yeah, I probably would have indicted the president but for the OLC opinion. That is not what he told the Attorney General William Barr repeatedly, and it is not what he said in his joint statement the day of his news conference. So this just tells me that Robert Mueller, you know, is not prepared sufficiently mentally. He's not equipped to handle a situation like this.
Yeah, I didn't go online. I wasn't reading Twitter or anything, Greg. We're talking to Greg Jarrett here on the Laura Ingraham podcast. So I didn't want – I was actually trying to not be naughty, so I didn't want to say what I was thinking this morning, namely – you know, the senior citizen's home is missing a patient, and they found him on Capitol Hill. Like, I didn't want to, it's just too, it was too easy, and we're all going to be up there in age, and it's not easy getting old. And I don't think I could do what, you know, such a high profile job at his, you know, advanced age. It probably would be really hard. So I don't begrudge him that. But what I do begrudge is the fact that this charade has gone on for this long, and the Democrats were still trying to squeeze blood out of a stone, and it wasn't happening. It's not happening. And it's an embarrassment for our country when we have so many important issues to deal with that Congress is just not going to deal with, because all they'll say is, well, he's a criminal and he's a racist. We're not working with him on anything. That's basically what they
right.
say.
Yeah, you know, Bob Mueller should never have taken the job. I mean, he has multiple conflicts of interest. I don't care if the DOJ pinheads said, oh, gee, you know, you don't have to recuse yourself because of these conflicts of interest. You know, those guys know nothing. Many of them in the ethics division of the DOJ are horribly biased. But what troubles me is that Rod Rosenstein, who appointed Bob Mueller, had no legal basis to do so. You mentioned early on in our conversation that this was always an investigation in search of a crime. You're absolutely right, Laura, because the special counsel statute says there first must be evidence of a crime. There never was any. And we know from the testimony of Lisa Page and James Comey and the text messages of Peter Strzok that they had nothing. So when the special counsel was appointed, there was no legal basis to do so. It was done because Rosenstein got angry. Rosenstein had penned the, you know, statement for Trump recommending Comey's firing. Rosenstein thought he'd be a hero among Democrats. And instead, they lashed out at Rosenstein. Rosenstein, and in my second book, I tell how, you know, he's cowering behind his desk at one point, being yelled at about appointing a special counsel without a legal basis. And all he can say is, am I going to get fired? Am I going to get fired? Again, it's in the second book, and it's unbelievable.
Oh, good.
So
oh,
good. Nightmare of 22 months, it only happened because Rosenstein got angry that he was being blamed for Comey's firing. So in an act of retribution, he appoints a special counsel, and all he cares about is his job. Am I going to get fired? It's unbelievable.
Oh my gosh. Well, this was Hakeem Jeffries, a far left guy from New York. Let's listen.
Donald Trump, one, committed an obstructive act, two, connected to an official proceeding, Three, did so with corrupt intent. Those are the elements of obstruction of justice. The president must be held accountable one way or the other.
Now, let me just say, if I might, I don't subscribe necessarily to your the way you analyze that. I'm not saying it's out of the ballpark, but I'm not supportive of that analytical charge.
Thank you.
That was kind of an interesting exchange where he's trying to bring Mueller along to this obstruction issue. He's like, well, no, I don't subscribe to that analysis.
Yeah, you know, and most of the discussion today was about what's in the report and what's been in the media, that the president asked Don McGahn to talk to the attorney general about removing Robert Mueller because of his conflicts of interest. Obstruction is a corrupt intent. If you have a legitimate basis for wanting to remove Mueller because he's got conflicts of interest, that's not by definition of the law obstruction of justice, and it doesn't stop the investigation itself, which continued to its conclusion. But, you know, in Mueller's twisted mind, and mostly Andrew Weissman and others on his team, you know, they're the thought police. And so they're going to delve into the mind of President Trump when, in fact, you know, McGahn said the president was complaining about Mueller's conflicts of interest. Again, that's just not obstruction, but that doesn't seem to bother Democrats.
There was an exchange with Louis Gohmert where this question about whether the president talked about the Comey firing with Mueller himself. Let's listen to that.
Let me ask you, when you talked to President Trump the day before he appointed or you were appointed as special counsel, you were talking to him about FBI director position again. Did he mention the firing of James Comey?
Not as a candidate. I was asked.
Did he mention the firing of James Comey in your discussion with him?
Cannot remember.
Pardon?
Cannot remember. Don't believe so. But I'm not going to be specific.
You don't remember. But if he did, you could have been a fact witness as to the president's comments and state of mind on firing James Comey.
I suppose that's possible.
What did you take away from that?
Well, I was glad to hear the question. I have said repeatedly on air that if I had just one question, that would be it. Mm-hmm. That the day before, Mueller accepted the job of special counsel in the Oval Office. He's meeting with the president, and the president discussed with him his reason for firing James Comey, which makes Mueller a fact witness.
Right.
He cannot be a witness and a prosecutor in the same case. Interestingly, he says, I don't remember. Look, I interviewed the president in the Oval Office about a month ago. I asked him that question, so I know the answer, and it's in my book. And I found it amazing that Robert Mueller couldn't remember whether the president discussed his reason for firing James Comey. Of course he did. He was telling everybody about it after he fired Comey.
Right.
He was telling the Russians and Lester Holt and the janitor down the hall. So, of course, he talked with Mueller about it, who was the former FBI director. And then later, when Andy Biggs asked the same question of Mueller, he answered, no, we didn't talk about it. So which is it? You don't remember? Or is the answer no? It can't be both.
Yeah, I mean, the idea that you don't remember such monumental facts in your one face-to-face meeting with the president, because that was the only face-to-face meeting that he had with the, President Trump. And he's sitting here today saying he doesn't remember. That's just on its face, unless he does truly have dementia or some severe memory lapses. That he either should have not been ever appointed special counsel, should have stepped down when he realized his memory was so bad, or others around him must have realized his memory was so bad. I mean, I would have asked him today. I would have asked him today, when's the last time you had a any type of memory test done? That would have been a great question, actually.
His memory was certainly a problem today, but that's a critical question. You know, Mueller had to dodge it, because if he answered, yes, we talked about it, that meant that his entire investigation was corrupted by his own conflicts of interest.
So
he had to
really
dodge the question.
Yeah, he really hit it.
Was not very artful. I mean, first he says, I don't remember. And then when asked again, he says, the answer is no. I happen to know the answer is yes. They did talk about it. And there were two other witnesses, so it should be easy to disprove Mueller's failed memory. Jeff Sessions was there. Rod Rosenstein was there. And they all talked about the reason for firing James Comey, which made Mueller a witness. He had to disqualify himself. He didn't. He tainted his own investigation.
Greg, I cannot wait to read your book. You've done such a masterful job at just analyzing this from the beginning. And, you know, I speak as someone who practiced white-collar law at Skadden Arps with Bob Bennett for years. And, you know, there are very few people on television that, frankly, on legal matters that I stop and watch and listen to. And I might sound like a snob when I say that, but I'm honest. And I tell you,
thank
like
you.
when you're speaking, Greg, I stop and make sure the volume's up and I listen. So thank you for everything you've done. And I just cannot wait to talk to you when your book is out or before. I'm sure I'll talk to you before then as well.
Yeah, let's do it. I'd love to talk to you some. So that'd
all
be
right.
Great. Thank you, Laura.
All
I appreciate
right.
it.
My pleasure. Greg Jarrett, Fox News legal analyst, best-selling author, of course, and his new book will just be huge. All right. Just absolutely huge. And we'll be promoting that on Facebook and Twitter and on our show. Let's go to Leanne in Texas. A lot of people calling in. Leanne.
Hey, Laura. And just on Greg Jarrett, he is amazing. I
love
listen
him.
To every word he says as well.
Love him.
You know, my biggest takeaway watching all this today is, wow, that Mueller did not run this investigation. I mean, not to be mean, but the guy just isn't capable. I can't imagine him investigating a traffic incident. I mean, his memory, he's so weak. And what does that say to me as an American, that the people he brought on are the ones that ran the investigation? And these are the very people that hate Donald Trump. These are the people, to me, and as an American, that these are the people that are the actual colluders and conspirators. And it's very, very disheartening to see what's happening in our country with all of this.
Let's go to Minnesota and John on the line. John, welcome to the Laura Ingraham Podcast.
Hey, Laura. Big fan. Love your shows.
Thank you.
I think this tune's a big dud for the Democrats. I think they're looking, you know, they're grasping at straws, using out-of-text quotes. Or context quotes, I should say. And they're just trying to create, I guess, the same narrative that, you know, he should be charged but can't be. But that, you know, Mueller seems to be acting like a kind of like a bumbling old grandpa.
This is all for 2020. Him. Yeah, it's just everyone, so everyone understands this. None of this is about the rule of law or making sure that everybody's held to the same legal standard or nobody's above the law, nobody's below the law. None of that matters to these Democrats. All this is about is smearing Trump ahead of 2020. It didn't work the first time. His numbers are higher in most polls than they've been in some time. Consumer confidence, retail sales, GDP, stock market, unemployment rates, record lows for unemployment. These are all incredible markers of what this president has accomplished despite this obscene and, I think, at its core, an unconstitutional and illegal investigation. But yet, even with that, he was able to accomplish so much. So, I think that this has been a huge loser for the Democrats. And now I think what we're seeing is, you know, this has backfired. And I say this as a legal analyst. Now, I'm not saying this as someone who supported the president. I say this as a legal analyst, looking at this clinically as a former white-collar criminal defense attorney, having done a lot of these big investigations myself involving huge companies. My view on this is that this was a nightmare for the Democrats. It is a swing and a miss, swing and a miss, swing and a miss. Check this out. Voters in a new poll. In a Politico Morning Consult survey, show now that by a 5-point margin, there's more skepticism about how the Justice Department conducted its investigation than trust that it was carried out fairly. 37% of voters said they believed Mueller's investigation had been carried out very or somewhat fairly, compared to 42% who said the probe was conducted not too fairly or not fairly at all. Both Democrats and Republicans have tilted toward a belief that the inquiry, which wrapped up this spring, was not conducted fairly. An April survey conducted shortly after the report's release, remember, found that 46% of voters thought the probe had been fair, compared with 29% who felt it had been unfair. Democrat voters, among them, the number who considered the investigation unfair shot up by 15 percentage points since that April survey, while the number who thought it had been a fair investigation has dropped by 9 points. So Mueller, old grandpa, has dug himself further into a hole, and the Democrats along with him. So jump in the hole and start burying yourself, because that's what's happening. And I want to remind everybody who's been listening to this podcast about the great skincare products that our friends at Chamonix, they put together with incredible compounds. And one that I just, you guys seem to just love, and I'm so happy about it, is the Genucel's amazing, amazing new jawline treatment. Now, a jawline, your neck, that's kind of sensitive skin. You want the MDL technology, the proprietary base, the brand new treatment that helps get your skin back to looking tighter, healthier, younger looking. Cheryl from Fort Wayne, Indiana loves it. She said she's been using it for a week. She says the results are visible and her jawline looks so much better, even younger. Smiley face. All right, well, love it. Keep sending us all of these comments, and I love to read them, and I'll continue to share them with all of you out there. Remember, it's just Genucel.com. That's Genucel.com. You get 100% of your money back, no questions asked, if you don't like the results, but you will, I'm telling you. But it's a great deal and just great guarantee. So you order now and you get the Genucel for bags and puffiness, also free with your order, and also the Genucel immediate effects, also free. So there's no time but the present to get the best skin possible with the Genucel line of products. That's Genucel.com, and two free gifts and express shipping at Genucel.com. Everyone loves summer, except when it comes to sleeping, because there's nothing worse than ruining a great night's sleep in these heat-trapping sheets with no way to get cool. Well, you want to stay dry. You want to get your rest. That's why I use Sheeks. Sheeks' patented sleep tech fabrics breathe 10 times better than traditional cotton sheets to keep you cool. They draw moisture away from the body to keep you dry, ensuring a deeper, more restorative night's sleep. Nothing compares to the comfort of Sheeks. The softness, unbelievable. And you're going to wake up feeling recharged and ready for a great day. So don't worry if you have a large bed. Sheeks come with deep pockets, so they'll fit any mattress perfectly. So what are you waiting for? Visit trysheeks.com/Laura and use the promo code Laura. You'll get 25% off your purchase. Plus, you'll receive free shipping, a bonus pair of pillowcases, and a 30-night risk-free guarantee. That's trysheeks.com/Laura, code Laura. trysheeks.com/Laura, code Laura.
I think you've both been very kind. I think this has been a disaster for the Democrats, and I think it's been a disaster for the reputation of Robert Mueller. He has seemed very uncertain with his brief. He doesn't know, seem to know, what things that are in the report. I think it does raise questions about the degree to which he actually was in charge of and control of this report, because he doesn't seem very much in control or charge of what the final report was. I should say whether he was in charge of the investigation, because he doesn't seem in charge of what the report actually says.
You're listening to the Laura Ingraham podcast. Well, Chris Wallace is 100% correct there. Steve Groves is a special assistant to the president, deputy press secretary at the White House. He joins us now for the administration's response. Steve, quick take from you. Good to have you on.
Thanks for having me on, Laura. Obviously, we are watching the same hearing here and having very similar reactions. And judging from what I'm seeing on social media, everyone's kind of coming to the same conclusion, which is, you know, this is a bit of a dumpster fire for Democrats. it would have been more effective if they had just sat and read passages of the report directly to Director Mueller and have him nod, because what they've tried to do instead is walk him through the report, and he's just kind of saying yes and no, and making it clear he's not going to talk about what millions of Americans actually want to know about, which are the corrupt origins of this investigation. He doesn't want to talk about the Steele dossier. I'm pretty sure I heard that he didn't even know what Fusion GPS was.
Yes, that was just incredible.
Astounding. I mean,
well,
that was a Democrat-funded project that gave birth to the Steele dossier. He doesn't want to talk about Joseph Mifsud, who apparently is the guy who told Papadopoulos about the emails, and Papadopoulos told the Australian, and the Australian told the United States. And but we're not going to get into why Mifsud wasn't investigated or charged for lying, even though everyone else under the sun, if they were close to the president, if they could get charged for lying, got charged for lying. So I don't think that this hearing is coming out as a net positive for Democrats.
Now, the thing that I found to be very strange here, and we talked about this with Greg Jarrett earlier, Steve, is that Mueller could not recall what the content of his conversation was with the president, except to say, well, the president wanted to know what qualities are good to have in a CIA director or an FBI. Was it CIA? FBI
right.
director, excuse me,
FBI,
FBI director, mm-hmm. obviously. I was talking about Comey. And then gave nothing on whether the conversation was what came around to whether Comey should be fired, meaning he should be a fact witness, not a special prosecutor from the beginning. If he's having a conversation with the president, which according to Jared, who just interviewed the president last week, that they had about Jim Comey, then how could he even be properly installed as a special counsel, namely since he's a fact witness in the underlying case?
Yeah, there are a lot of parts of how this investigation came to pass. How Comey was appointed so soon after meeting with the president about the FBI job that we have not got to the bottom of, and this hearing, we're definitely not going to get to the bottom of those things either. I'm hoping, along with many, that those issues and others are going to be looked into by Attorney General Barr, because he's just as confused as you and I are, and he arrived at the Justice Department thinking that there would be ready answers for some of these troubling questions, and he has said in interviews he got there, and not only were there not answers to these questions, there were conflicting accounts of what came to pass. So it looks like you and I and many others are going to have to wait until the Attorney General completes his review of how this whole sham of an investigation got started in the first place.
Jim Sensenbrenner, who, of course, many of us who've been around and were here during impeachment in 98, remember he, along with Lindsey Graham, were House impeachment managers in the impeachment proceedings of Bill Clinton. He had his bite at the apple today. Let's listen.
Is it true that there's nothing in Volume 2 of the report that says that the president may have engaged in impeachable conduct?
Well, we have studiously kept in the center of our investigation our mandate, and our mandate does not go to other ways of addressing conduct. Our mandate goes to developing the report and turning the report into the Attorney General.
What is your reaction to that?
Well, I would think that would take quite a bit of air out of the Democrats' balloon, because you asked most of them what this report was, and they all say that it was a wink and a nod from Mueller to set out a roadmap for impeachment. I think in that one answer, he deflated that. And thank God, because that would have been far outside of Mueller's purview. I mean, the regulations say nothing about setting up some type of roadmap. And as a prosecutor, it would have been fully unethical of him to do anything but reach a prosecution or declination decision. You know, an ethical line that I think he goes up to, if not crosses already, in Volume 2 of this report by, you know, waxing poetically about evidence that they've unearthed and citing to hundreds of news articles, and then just kind of punting at the end and leaving it to the Attorney General to make a decision that no crime had been committed.
Steve, I have to say, of all of the craziness that I've witnessed in the last 20 plus years in Washington, this spectacle today was one of the most it's embarrassing.
It's
surreal. There's kind of some humor in it, but it's surreal. It's so absurd on so many levels. It's a colossal waste of time, waste of money, waste of focus. And again, as someone who practiced in this area of the law, it's embarrassing that someone who was the FBI director would even put his name, with his background, put his name on this report. I mean, it was written like a, you know, it's kind of a cobbled together thing, kind of like what you do when you were in eighth grade and you had to write a 10-page paper, and you didn't really have 10 pages, so you just threw a lot of other stuff in there. It's like, okay, we got to add a couple more pages here. Cut and paste something that you wrote last week, but we nixed from the report. Let's throw that in section two. I mean, it was just really a hodgepodge, crazy quilt of little quips and little remembrances that they hoped would drop breadcrumbs for the lamestream media to gobble up. I think that was, as much as anything else, that's where it went. And, of course, you know, maybe for ultimate impeachment, even though he wouldn't say it.
Yeah, even if you wanted to give a more charitable view to Volume 2, it does sound like kind of a Truth Commission report or a long law school essay answer for a crim law class, as Emmett Flood put into a letter months ago after first reviewing it, that, you know, they all got together and they read newspaper articles and they plucked a piece of testimony here and looked at a little document there and said, well, you know, this is kind of, you know, impeachment, you know, this is like some obstruction light here. Let's just kind of throw it all in there. And because we didn't find any Russian conspiracy, we have to give the people something. And this is what they came up with, Laura.
Steve, finally, Congressman Kelly Armstrong from North Dakota was getting into this question of conflicts that his staff may have had, including Jeannie Rhee. And going back to the point that Mueller seems to be really he was clearly just a figurehead in, of this investigation.
Yeah.
He gave the investigation gravitas.
So
but, oh, my God,
yeah.
It's just beyond obvious. In this exchange, after so many hours of television and ink has been spilled on Jeannie Rhee and Andrew Weissman and their connections to the Clintons, this is how it went down. Let's listen.
Are you aware that Ms. Jeannie Rhee represented Hillary Clinton in litigation regarding personal emails originating from Clinton's time as Secretary of State?
Yes.
Did you know that before she came on the
tape?
No. Okay. I'm pretty sure that she worked with him at his law firm with him, Jeannie Rhee, before, and she worked obviously at the White House, but I'm pretty sure that you had to have known, and if you didn't know, who's doing the conflict checks here? Obviously, he doesn't do everything as head of the investigation,
but
doesn't
but
it seem like
he had to know how crucial it was that the members of his team should be beyond reproach. You know, this was going to be a highly political investigation. Everybody knew it. And look at this. Look at these folks that they ended up with: Clinton lawyers, Clinton donors, Clinton, you know, supporters that went to her victory party, all the way up to the guy who he chose to sit next to him at the table today, who represented someone who installed Hillary Clinton's homebrew server and smashed her BlackBerries with a hammer. That's the guy sitting next to him today. So if only for the avoiding the appearance of impropriety and the optics that come along with this, I think either he or someone who was in his service did him a real disservice by putting that particular team of attorneys together, including Jeannie Rhee and Weissman.
Yeah, well, she was one of his partners at Wilmer.
Yeah.
You know, Wilmer Cutler, well, he's called Wilmer Cutler and Pickering when I interviewed him there years ago. But so she was one of his partners. Yeah, she was one of the partners. And now she's saying, well, no, he's saying, oh, I didn't know about that. What? Yeah,
the White House, we constantly get stories from the media about candidates that the White House has vetted for cabinet positions all the way down to other political appointments. You know, who was doing the vetting and the and, you know, just a little bit of due diligence on the folks selected for this team, including, you know, Strzok and Page? And did anyone just pull those people aside and said, hey, do you have any dog in this fight between Clinton and Trump? Because if you do, you should let it out at the beginning before we decide to put you at the center of this investigation. Who was doing that?
I mean, this sounds somewhat mean. I don't mean it to, but I decided to wait until after the entire testimony to make a comment on Mueller's just entire delivery. Other people are saying it, but now I'm going to say it. They should have asked him questions about when's the last time you received a memory test. Have you ever done a memory test? Well, I'm sorry, but like my dad, when he was Mueller's age, was starting to get forgetful. And it's just a fact. I feel like I'm getting forgetful at my age. I can't imagine 20 plus years from now. So I just think he either has some kind of memory issue, or he's not being completely candid, or he had literally nothing to do with the entire investigation and just came into the office with his cup of coffee every day. Now, I'm not sure what he actually did. I mean, we should have asked him, what were your daily duties? How did you spend your day? Give us your typical day in the office. Stephen Groves, thank you so much for spending some time with us today. Special Assistant to the President, Deputy Press Secretary, and also, you know, he's a lawyer. I mean, he holds a master's degree at Georgetown Law, Juris Doctor, Ohio Northern, and he went to Florida State, which I'll let the Florida State thing go because I am an Alabama fan. So I'm going to let Florida State go. Steve, thanks so much. Great to talk to you today.
Great to talk to you too, Laura.
All right, you take care. They say home is where the heart is, and the reality is that home is where all of your precious belongings are located. Home is your sanctuary after a hard day's work. Home is a special place where you create memories with your family and your friends. So when you want to protect yourself and your most precious investment, go with the nation's number one smart home security provider, ADT. With ADT Smart Home Security, you'll have a team of professionals monitoring your home 24/7, using the latest innovations to safeguard your property. Visit ADT.com. That's ADT.com. You're listening to the Laura Ingraham Podcast. Let's go to Clarinda, New Jersey. Clarinda, welcome to the Laura Ingraham Podcast.
Thanks, Laura. Thanks for the opportunity to let me express my opinions.
You're absolutely welcome.
Well, my first take is that Mueller is not as sharp as he's been touted. He's stuttering and bumbling, and I don't know, he just appears like an old bureaucrat. And I really don't understand how he gets away with refusing to answer questions or saying, I can't speak to that. I don't understand the rules of the testimony, but that to me it seems like you're supposed to answer questions, and I don't understand how he gets away with that.
Well, I think the Justice Department did tell him to stay within the confines of the document and stick to what he said in his 9-minute press conference some months ago or weeks ago, several weeks ago. And so he kind of did that, but I certainly noticed that the Democrats, when they're asking the questions, Clarinda, you have Nadler never interrupts the Democrats and says, your time is up. But the Republicans always are told when they're asking questions, your time is up. It's so unfair. But even with that, they're getting goose eggs here. But I would agree with you. I just tweeted out this following tweet. Here's some advice. Don't build a big hearing around a lawyer who told you he didn't want to be there. That was just a total nightmare. Let's listen to this.
The president committed the crime of obstruction. You could not publicly state that in your report or here today.
Can you repeat the question, sir? You're going to have to repeat that for me. Can you read the last question? I'd have to look more closely at the statute.
I just read it to you.
I have on the screen.
Is that correct on the screen?
Can you repeat the question?
That's where we are. That's where we are. A man who had this storied career and was touted at the very beginning, which I said on my show. If you all remember what I said on television, okay, I said this and I made the point very clearly. And this was even before I had the Ingraham angle. I made the point very clearly when I said, beware the narrative when someone is touted to be the best of the best, this consummate professional. No one ever lives up to the big buildup. It never happens. And I always ask, well, I'm glad all these Republicans are saying he's the greatest thing since sliced bread, but then why did he put together this team of lawyers, many of whom had far too many conflicts, direct conflicts, or appearance of a conflict of interest? Why was that allowed? Joining us now is Saul Weisenberg, of course, partner at Nelson Mullins. But he's here as a legal analyst and former deputy independent counsel in Whitewater. He joins us now. Saul, first, your just general take on what you saw in this Mueller hearing.
Hi, Laura. Great to be here. My sense is that it probably didn't move the needle much. However, I do think that certain of the Democratic Congress people were good at staying on point on this issue of whether or not there was criminal obstruction. Is this kind of behavior usually part of an obstruction analysis? Are these the elements of an obstruction? And making the rhetorical point, if any of us had done this, we would be charged with obstruction. Now, I don't agree with that, but I think they stayed on point, and that may have an effect. I don't know how that'll be gauged, but I imagine they'll be polling, right?
Well, I think there is. Well, the polling that came out, and this piece just came out today, Politico Morning Consult poll that said that since April, the last time this poll was done, more Democrats, a jump of 15% of Democrats polled, consider the investigation unfair. That's just a disaster. That's before this hearing. And then the number who thought the investigation fair dropped by 9 points among just Democrats. And, of course, the figure going up on the overall number as well.
Yeah, that was amazing. It remains to be seen if there'll be any effect here. I think most people do believe, look, we know what was done. We know what the president did and didn't do. We know he's really exonerated on the question of coordination, collusion, conspiracy, whatever you want to call it. And he did some things in the obstruction-related area that may have been unwise, that may have been reprehensible, one or two of them, but it's not clear obstruction that anybody could prosecute anyway, so let's move on and deal with the problems of the country.
What was your sense about his performance? Did he seem as sharp as you would have thought, Saul?
No, he didn't. He looks like he's missed a step or two. And actually, a friend of mine, a former FBI agent who has been on your show and who accompanied Mueller in Afghanistan, who was with him on three different occasions, texted to me during the testimony that this is not the Bob Mueller that he knew. So he isn't as sharp as he was.
No, and it happens with age. I mean, it just happens. I mean, all of us change. Your mind changes. But it doesn't mean you can't be a terrific person, a lawyer, even doctor. But if you can't remember the focus and some of the specifics of the one meeting you had with the president, which he could not do except to say, well, he asked me about what makes a good FBI director. To me, Saul, that was very telling.
Let me ask you, when you talked to President Trump the day before he appointed or you were appointed as special counsel, you were talking to him about FBI director position again. Did he mention the firing of James Comey?
Not as a candidate. I was asked.
Did he mention the firing of James Comey in your discussion with him?
Cannot remember.
Pardon?
Cannot remember. Don't believe so, but I'm not going to be specific.
You don't remember. But if he did, you could have been a fact witness as to the president's comments and state of mind on firing James Comey.
I suppose that's possible.
That, to me, was among the most shocking exchanges. When you don't remember, I mean, the firing of someone else who's your friend? What?
I think there were many instances where
he just didn't appear to be sharp, where he had to ask them to repeat statements, where he didn't really have the report at his fingertips. I don't think that necessarily will hurt him in the public eye. And in fact, I think that the Republicans on the committee, most of them, missed some real opportunities to make some real subtle points that they could have done in rapid fire session, but just didn't. As you know, these things tend to deteriorate into speechifying on both sides. And that's what was done here. I think there were some real opportunities missed.
Congresswoman Martha Roby asked him a question about that March letter to Bill Barr. Let's listen.
On March 27, 2019, you wrote a letter to the Attorney General essentially complaining about the media coverage of your report. Who wrote that March 27th letter?
Well, I can't get into who wrote it, the internal deliberation.
But you signed it.
What I will say is the letter stands for itself.
Okay. Why did you write a formal letter since you had already called the Attorney General to express those concerns?
I can't get into that internal deliberation.
Did you authorize the letter's release to the media, or was it leaked?
I have no knowledge on either.
Well, you went nearly 2 years without a leak. Why was this letter leaked?
I can't get into it.
Your reaction there, Saul?
I don't think he looked very good there. I don't think he was consistent in his invocation of areas that he would or would not get into. At times, he appeared to be confused. I don't want to in any way imply or state that he's senile or anything like that. He's just not as sharp as he used to be. But I think he comes off as what he is, a person of integrity, a patriot, and I think you need to be careful about, congresspeople need to be careful about how they deal with it. I think there were a couple of Republicans who asked very, you know, short, staccato questions and got answers that were helpful. I had an op-ed this morning on FoxNews.com, 25 questions that could be asked that I think you would have, they're very factual, and I think you would have answered them, and I think some significant points could have been made. I just don't think it's going to move the needle at all. Do you?
I don't know. I mean, I don't think anyone's watching, I have to tell you. I mean, I just, friends of mine are like, oh, who's watching this? It's so, we already heard, asked and answered. I mean, people have moved on from this. And the overall point I'd make is that, and this is more of a, this is a political point, not a legal point, but the Democrats seem to have an uncanny way of giving the Trump administration gifts. Because this, to me, this spectacle does nothing for them and merely gives the Trump folks another opportunity to say, see, it was so bad. He didn't even know that his former law partner, Jeannie Rhee, worked for Hillary Clinton. And he didn't even express any concern that that would have in any way conflicted her out of being part of the team. So to me, it gives the Republicans more opportunities to confirm either he was just kind of a figurehead, or that there was an effort not to do due diligence on conflicts, just a basic conflict check that, Saul, you run in your firm, I ran, and it was part of and subjected to at SCAD and ARPS. I mean, this is just what you do. But the fact that he didn't know she represented Hillary, that just makes no sense at all.
And I think your figurehead point is one that is a very important one. This will make it, his performance will make it much easier for Republicans to say, oh my God, he didn't really have full control of his investigation. He picked people who he had worked with in the past and trusted, and perhaps that trust was misplaced.
Mm-hmm. Saul, where do we go from here? The Democrats will mull more possibilities of impeachment? Will they seize on anything he said to support an impeachment inquiry? They have 90 Democrats, one Republican, Justin Amash, now in favor of an impeachment inquiry.
I don't think that's the game plan unless they see a dramatic shift in public opinion on this point. I think the game plan is to continue hearings of some sort and to keep the ball going, to keep the narrative alive, and to take that into the election and make it an election issue. I think it's very clear that Nancy Pelosi decided quite some time ago we're not going to go the impeachment route. It's not wise politically. We're going to go somewhere else. And in fact, as I pointed out on your television show, they haven't even litigated very aggressively in the courts some of these questions that they actually have a decent chance on. You know, I believe if they were serious about this, the first day of the new Congress, they should have subpoenaed Don McGahn. He's your dramatic witness, right?
Mm-hmm.
The strongest piece of evidence they have on obstruction, I don't think it's enough, but the best piece has to do with asking Don McGahn to prepare a document denying that the president told him to fire Mueller. They should have subpoenaed Don McGahn day one when they took over the Congress, and when he refused to come, they could have started litigating that issue immediately. And instead, they've dawdled for months and months. You have to ask yourself why. The reason why is they'd rather make this in the court of public
political
opinion
issue.
Than make it a campaign issue, right?
Yeah, a political issue. But again, Politico Morning Consult polling indicates that the longer this has gone on, the less confidence people have in its overall sense of fairness. So the public opinion seems to be running against them now for 4 months on this. So it'll be interesting to see where it goes after this, to the extent that anyone saw. I mean, we all watch this stuff, but I think most people just don't watch this stuff. So it becomes framed by the individuals who writes all who just want to use it for mostly political purposes. We're going to see you on TV, right? Well, you're going to be on TV with us to discuss
all
this.
I'll be there. I'll be
fantastic.
There.
Yeah. Fantastic. Saul Weisenberg, thank you so much, here on the Laura Ingraham podcast. This reminds me of the old saying, know when it's time to leave. You have to know when it's time to say goodbye, and very few people know when it's time to leave and time to retire. Johnny Carson, Jerry Seinfeld, George Washington. There's just not many people who they want to hold on. And it's flattering to be asked to do, this job, I guess. He decided to do it maybe out of a sense of duty, or maybe, he thought I don't know what he thought. Who knows? I don't know the man. But it's time to retire. Go do something else you could do. It's probably be useful, but you weren't the person to do this job. Not with how you staffed your office, and clearly this non-exoneration of the president. That was completely unprofessional to have issued and written that document, which obviously he didn't write one word of. Not one word. That would have been a good question. Did you write one word of the document? I can't answer that. That's it. He would have said that, right? I can't answer that. All right. You're listening to the Laura Ingraham podcast. I want to thank all of our great sponsors who are supporting this show: Genucel, ADT Home Security, and Home Title Lock and Sheiks. We'll see you next time. America, now and forever. The Laura Ingraham podcast.